LA Talk Radio thanks you for being a listener. Did you know you too can host your own radio show with us? Go to our site at latalkradio.com or email info@latalkradio.com right now and start your show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, Rifters, Keith and Alan here, and we want to give a shout-out to our sponsors.
Yeah, man.
How many people out there listening have ever fucked around in the water?
What?
I mean, kayaking, paddleboarding, or even just going to the beach.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Have you ever wanted to take something important with you, so you put it inside those three Ziploc bags and seal them real tight, and then when you dive in the water and you get out, your stuff is, like, fucking soaked?
It happened to me once. On a trip to Hawaii.
What happened, Alan?
I met this gal. She gave me her number on a piece of paper, and I ziplocked bagged it and took a dip to swim with the alligators. I came back to the shorelines, and Megan Fox's number was soaked.
Well, now, Alan, don't you worry. I got a solution for that.
Why is that?
Because Flutide Worldwide is here to help us. They are a manufacturing company of high-quality dry bags. You put your stuff in it, roll it up to the top, and your stuff stays bone dry in the river or even on the beaches of Hawaii while you swim with the alligators.
Oh, that's cool.
It is cool, Alan. Their LCV1 is a 20-liter bag. It's big enough to put all your stuff in it, like a cell phone, iPad, wallet, or a picture of Megan Fox.
I want one, Keith. How do I get one?
Easy. Print it off the internet. Haha, just kidding. Go to search Flutide LCV1 on Amazon and check out their website, www.floodtide.com, FLOODTIDE.com. And you can also find them on the Facebook and on the Instagram. Back to the show. Excellent, guys. Welcome to Razor Riffs.
Yeah, man.
That was a fun sponsor.
Oh, I'm still thinking of the alligators and the trip to Hawaii, man.
Yeah, that was funny.
Oh,
right?
Shoot, man.
Because alligators this time of year in Hawaii are very dangerous.
Well, you know, it all depends on the alligator, you know.
I was going to say crocodile.
Oh, my God. But, I thought that was a different type of species. I thought they were not the same, crocodiles and alligators.
Yeah, they are different. But when I was growing up, I always thought like an alligator was a male and a crocodile was a female.
You know, I know that we could go into the whole Caitlyn thing. Caitlyn Jenner?
No.
But these, we know these
No,
alligators.
But I'm serious because alligator...
Oh,
right?
That's cute.
Al. Croc-a-dile.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I don't know how many handsome ladies you've met named Croc, but I've met a lot.
Good point. That sounds nasty.
Well, we have a great show.
Well,
I hope so. Before we talk about our guests, but you were in New York.
Yes, I was indeed.
Last week. How was that?
It was fantastic, and I told you the story coming up here, and I'm not going to go over it right now. But I had a great time. I stayed with my mom in New York City. You know, she's got a beautiful apartment there on Madison Avenue, and you know, my sister's not far away. And like I said, what's really funny about this is that our guest, his show, which I'll be quite frank with you, I hadn't seen some of the episodes. I hadn't seen one, in fact, an entire part of his series. I hadn't seen. My mom says, "Here, you don't have cable, you don't have all the channels, you know, here, watch and enjoy." So I said, "What the heck? I'm channel surfing, and guess what? I watch, and you corrected me, and I don't want to screw this up. I watch the show.
Why don't you save the story for when he calls?
Yeah, I'm just telling the audience. I'm just telling the audience that this guest is fantastic. His show is fantastic. The closer.
Well, let me give him an introduction in case he calls while we do the introduction. So I'll mention the guest. And then
go ahead. Why don't you?
Is that cool? Our guest today is a very talented writer. He wrote my favorite play called Homefront. He wrote the TV show The Closer. He created that. Yes. And he also wrote and created the hit TV show on TNT called Major Crimes. Yeah, and it's the one and only James Duff, who is actually our very first... I mean, everyone we've had on the show has been a writer in some point, but this is our official writer. Like, that's all he does is write.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that that's a big deal with him.
Yeah.
He definitely is a writer.
Yeah.
And I look very forward to talking to him. And, you know, while we're waiting here, Major Crimes is what I saw. And I can tell you, great show.
Yeah.
Great show.
It's fantastic. Oh, someone's calling us. Let's pick it up. Hi, is this James?
Yes, is this Keith?
Yes, it is. Hey, James, how are you, pal?
Fine, how are you?
Doing great. James, this is my trusty sidekick, Alan Lee.
Hi, Alan.
Hi, James. Glad to meet you.
James, thank you so much for doing the show. I'm a huge fan of your work. I was telling Alan that I wrote you on Facebook. That's how I got it. Because you're a hard man to keep a hold of, you know?
I'm sorry. It's not that I'm so secretive, nor am I... Though I write mysteries, I am not a man of mystery. But, when we're not actually airing shows, I don't really do much in the way of publicity.
Yeah.
So that's why it's probably harder to reach me than maybe most people.
Well, I don't know if you remember my email, but I'm a huge fan of your play Homefront.
Yes, I did. I did remember your email, and I was really thrilled to see that. I know the play is used a lot in acting classes.
Yes, yes, it is.
And I've spoken to several young actors who have played Jeremy over the years and have done the scene between Jeremy and his sister Karen.
Yes,
and the play keeps getting done now and again. You know, it was very much more popular overseas than it was in America.
Really?
Because in America, everybody gets tripped up over the Vietnam of it all, where I thought Vietnam was a metaphor for the loss of innocence. And that is indeed how it's read overseas, as a big metaphor for the loss of innocence.
Interesting.
But everyone was... Not everyone, but there were a lot of critics who were incredibly bloody, literally. I mean, they just took everything. They were just bloody, literal-minded about the whole thing. It was a big surprise to me, but it was my very first play. I was only 28 when we did it in London.
Wow.
And
nice.
So it was a big surprise to me that... Maybe I dramatized it to the point where people thought it was actually about Vietnam. I don't know what to.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that, but
I thought it was great because I first came across of it because I saw the movie called The War at Home. It was on TV, and I thought, oh my god, that was a fantastic script when I was in high school. So I got the play, and I thought the play was just fantastic. And to me,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, we had to cut that Jeremy speech from the movie too. The speech about Brady, his friend Brady. That was sort of the centerpiece of that scene, but it worked very well without Emilio Estevez. Did a fantastic job directing that movie, I thought.
He really did. I was telling Alan how that movie came out, how Emilio liked the play so much, he said that he wanted to make this a film. That's true, right? That's what I read.
Yes, I think he did a read-through. This was before he met me.
Yeah.
So he did a read-through with, I think, his father and some other people, and he loved it so much. Yeah, he loved it so much, he contacted me, and we ended up doing the movie. It was, or he ended up doing most of the movie. I mean, I wrote the script, and he starred and directed in it. And he was, you know, as well acted as it was. It was really, really stupendously directed. He's an incredibly gifted guy, Emilio.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I was wondering, how come like there wasn't a huge big budget for it? Because it was just such an original story that I would think it would be huge mainstream everywhere. But it's hard to find on DVD.
And this is the problem, because with the story, and like I said, I was young when I wrote it, and I didn't know that it was going to be a problem. But Vietnam was not, and still is not. It's a hard sell.
Yeah.
In the commercial arena. Mm-hmm. And that's where the movie had to exist. And we got some really fantastic reviews. In fact, the movie was better received than the play. I was essentially called anti-American, which is ridiculous, but that was sort of the idea of that a lot of critics promoted.
Yeah.
And that so I think the movie is sometimes seen as being critical of America, and you know, I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah.
Because it's not, it's a very, I think, truthful, honest story, and the characters are perceived as that overseas, like, you know, like it went all around the world, that play, and really had a great run in many countries.
Yeah.
And just in America, because it's the Vietnam thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Alan was telling me
it's hard to do movies about or plays about wars you've lost.
Yeah, no, it's not a fun American theme.
Yes, exactly.
But Alan told me he saw it at Long Beach. How many years
ago? You know what? I might want to stand corrected on that, but I saw what I thought was a version of Hometown.
Homefront.
I mean, Homefront, excuse me. Hometown, that's a buffet. Sorry about that.
I'm
getting hungry.
Perfectly okay.
Okay.
Eat and there all the time.
Oh, good. Thank you. See, there you go. What a guest. you know, James, it was in Long Beach, and I might be confused. It was the actress of all things that was in the horror movie. God, I'm blanking out here. It was the Marvel character, the Swamp Thing. I know this is a strange way to describe the play, but you know, she was doing it in Long Beach, and it was the Vietnam vet. He comes home. Right, he has the memory blanks and all that. React with the father and all that. And I really enjoyed it there. I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember the name of the actress.
Yeah,
but I saw it in Long Beach.
Oh, it's on the stage you saw it?
Yes, on the stage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I know they did a, you know, they do it's, you know, it's, they do productions of it. I do know that productions of it have popped up around the country.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's. The play is in the bestseller section at
Samuel
at Dramatist. So I know that young people in particular like that play. But I think actually young people like it better now than they did when I was growing up, because they don't have the same memories of Vietnam.
No, they don't. They don't. The perspective doesn't hit them quite the same way, and they really do see it as a parental, the father, you know, the whole family deal.
Yeah, I mean, that was the play was conceived as, because I didn't know anything, I'd never written a play for adults before.
Right.
I wrote that play. And I went back to Aristotle.
Yes,
and
yes.
Because I didn't know where to start. So I thought, well, I'm going to start at the beginning. And I went back to Aristotle, and it was, and I thought, if I could make this family the protagonist, then they would stand for all families everywhere.
Exactly.
And then each individual an antagonist, so that it's the inability, the antagonist's inability to properly come together.
Exactly.
And destroys the protagonist. And it all takes place in 24 hours. I didn't necessarily feel like it had to go sun up to sundown. I did compress the time, and I did put it all, you know, I started at the point of crisis, and I felt like I was onto something. And also, you know, the movements inside the piece the act, the two scenes per act. And I thought of it in terms of writing like a little symphony and writing four movements, because I was much more familiar with musical composition at that time than I was with writing drama. So I sort of combined the concept of classical music in Aristotle, tried to radicalize it a little bit, and I don't know, I had a lot of fun writing it. It was a blast.
Oh wow. That's great.
And does it make you feel good that have you ever seen like a production of Homefront recently where people are recently reacting it, and that's just gotta be so cool, because you wrote one of the greatest plays ever and you get to see it, you know, passed down from, you know, years.
I don't know if it's one of the greatest plays ever, but I think it is.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to see people still enjoying it and still finding it useful. We just watched last month the 25th anniversary of the first TV movie I ever wrote, which was called Doing Time on Maple Drive.
I actually watched that last night.
Keith has just watched that.
and I watched that with the crowd, and that was great too, because, you know, it didn't seem to have become as dated as I thought. I was afraid it might have. I hadn't seen it in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And to see young people laughing at the right places too, by the way.
Yeah.
And really, really enjoying the show. That was really, I have to say, it made me feel very happy leaving the screening, and just glad that I was able to still be relevant 25 years after the fact.
Yeah.
And the panel discussion afterwards was fun too. It's, you know, I'm not one of those people who actually writes with the idea of posterity in mind, because I'm not going to be around to enjoy it.
Right.
But I'm thrilled whenever anybody likes anything, because people, there's so much stuff out there. You know, just to be plucked from the general din of the marketplace for any reason at all is somehow an honor in a way.
Yeah.
And writers like to ask questions that, you know, have no answers. And so you look for big questions. And I think, you know, The Board Home and Maple Drive were asking some big questions. In Maple Drive, for example, you know, people on the surface, it's about a gay person coming out, but it's actually about denial and how denial permeates our lives and how it can destroy us, or how we can break through it to find something truer and better. And so the gay thing was actually a metaphor for denial. And that question about denial is still seriously being asked today on lots of different planes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Universal. And it was a great way to treat that theme. You know,
our country seems pretty much bound up in denial right now.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I feel like the movie had some kind of special relevance when we screened it last month.
A lot of people don't know this, but when I was watching it, I noticed a very young Jim Carrey.
Yes, it was his first dramatic role.
Yeah.
And he was amazing in the movie. And he really wanted to do the film. He came in, he auditioned for it. It was before he had made Ace Ventura.
Yeah, I was telling Alan that. I was
And you know, I think he wanted to do something that showed his range, and he certainly accomplished that. I thought he did a fantastic job.
Yeah. I thought he did too.
And Ken Olin, it was the first movie that, there were a lot of firsts. It was my first television drama, it was Ken Olin's first movie that he'd ever directed.
Wow.
It was Jim Carrey's first drama. I mean, it was filled with firsts for a lot of people. And it was also the first time I'd ever written a role specifically for an actor, and that actor had played that part. Because I wrote the role of the father in Maple Drive for Jim Sickey.
Oh, really?
Yes, without ever having met him, by the way. I had just watched him several times and lots of things, and I was just like, oh, you know what? This is the face I'm going to write to. This is the voice, the rhythms I'm going to write to. And he just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, he did. He was so interesting. His scenes with his kids were just like, it just blew me away because it was like, wow. You know, like he totally changed 360 on his viewpoint, and I was like, that's fantastic.
He was, he had a journey to go on. He went on a big journey, and he just really took you along with him. I mean, the nice thing about that movie, and Jim will tell you the same thing, is that everybody in it thinks they're the lead.
Yeah.
and has some reason to believe that. And it was really exciting watching the movie again with Billy McNamara was there and Lori Loughlin and Jane Brooke and Jim Sicken came, and we had a nice discussion afterwards. It was really, really fun.
A question I have is how many plays have you written?
Well, I've only written two adult plays. I'm finishing my third one. I left New York to come to Los Angeles, and after Maple Drive, I just worked almost exclusively in television, except for Homefront, The War at Home, and rewrites,
right,
of features. I've done a few of those. But I've just mainly exclusively concentrated on television, partially because the writer has so much control over the story in television, and you get to reach so many people, so many more people than you do in the theater, and also because it happens much more quickly than on stage. The pace from getting a play written to having it staged is glacial.
Yeah.
Mostly. And I didn't like all the time I had to wait to find out whether or not I was going to be waiting tables again.
Yeah.
So the theater still fascinates me, and I have a new play I'm trying to finish. And I'm hoping that this one will skirt less outrageous topics. Homefront was considered very political, and the other play, A Quarrel of Sparrows, was about religion. And so I've already broken both the taboos that you're not supposed to break in writing about, seemingly writing overtly about politics, which I was not doing, and covertly about religion, which I was.
I think that's another reason why I admire you so much, because you break the rules, you know what I mean? You don't care, you just write what's in your heart, and I think like that's just very important for a writer, you know?
Well, I try to write authentically, and to even when I'm not writing about things I know well, I try to find out about those things so that when I'm telling the story, I have the ring of truth in lots of places. And I always feel like the more authentically you create the world, the more authentic the characters in that world will seem.
Yeah.
And the more honestly you tell the story, I just take it as writ that I haven't felt anything that most other people haven't felt. I mean, everything I've felt, most other people have felt. Like I don't have a lot of original feelings.
Right.
I might have my own perspective, which is everybody's perspective is unique, but the feelings that we go through, the passions, the anger, the joy, the love, the grief, all of those things I feel are very much the same from person to person. I mean, it's just levels, right?
Yeah.
So if I can write honestly about what's going on in my heart. Also, I tend to write about things I don't like about myself.
Yeah.
Mainly because I don't want to run out of material. And writing about the things I don't like about myself gives me the space of my entire life to cover.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that something was said along those same lines. The character, the lead, the policewoman in The Closer, they used the word, you channeled parts of your personality, and I find that fascinating because I, you know, they always say that you can't escape writing about who you are when you write a character, that pieces of you are going to, you know, they're going to get in there, and you admitted that, you know, that you used, you know, parts of yourself in the character of The Closer.
Oh, that's absolutely true. As a matter of fact, I'm the two most disliked characters in The Closer, and that's, oddly, that's Brenda and Hope.
That's funny.
And, yeah. And when I first, I was kind of stunned, honestly. I mean, I realized, you know, she's complicated in many ways, but when I was writing her, I thought, well, you know, she's a little like this, she's a little like that, but overall. And when people said, you know, they found her incredibly neurotic.
You know, I tell you, I agreed with that, James.
Yes, I know, and I was like a little stunned. I'm like, well, I know she's not exactly normal, but she's not like crazy.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
I'm a workaholic.
Sure.
And I have a hard time. I had to write this pilot, by the way, and you know, I had 6 weeks, basically, to do what normally takes me. That's normally a 3-month process, at least, for me to figure out what it is I'm going to do.
So this was a little bit different than writing the play.
Oh, yeah. And so not having any time, really, to think about the character, I just basically based it on me and ripped off my mother and ripped off my sister.
That's fantastic, I think.
And there she was. And when people said, I think she's really neurotic, or why is she so crazy about doing it, and she's really bad about misleading people, and I was like, well, she's supposed to mislead people. That's her job, and that's my job as a storyteller. I'm supposed to mislead you into believing this really happened. This is, you're watching a story that's, you're in the story.
Yeah.
And so I... I was, the first few times it popped up, I have to admit my feelings were a little hurt, because I was like, well, she's not that crazy, but after a while I got used to it, and really it was the role of Pope was also based on another part of my personality, and it was the relationship between those two characters that I was constantly trying to manage in my own life. And honestly, virtually everything I write has something to do with the balance between pragmatism and idealism, which is why the justice system is such a great place for me to study.
Yes, exactly. The crime genre that you picked, it's just wonderful how you use the crime genre that way.
And so since I had that going, I also had the duality in my own life. You know, we all have the balance of idealism and pragmatism defined in our daily lives. And Pope represented my ambition and my desire to be in charge, and my need to have a platform from which to rise, and Brenda represented my desire just to do the work and just to be precise and to always finish what it is I start. And she is, you know, no matter whether anybody wants it by the time I'm done or not. And she was, oh my gosh, it was amazing writing those scenes, especially since they couldn't come together. They could never really come together, Pope and Brenda.
Yeah.
Do you think sometimes the scenes that don't come together are actually the scenes that are the strongest?
Yes, absolutely, no question. Her inability to understand that she was complicating things for him.
Yeah.
Her need for him was so strong, and her inability to see what he wanted from her was mm-hmm. was so extreme. You know, it was a bit maddening. Yeah. And his inability to understand that they really were not, they were going to work together, but they were not going to ever be happily married.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It took him a long time to grasp that.
Yeah.
And I think that was an interesting part of the series. And then she got married to Fritz, who's based in many ways on my own husband. So our arguments tended to end up in the show.
Well, your own husband's in the major crimes.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes, he is. And actually, I should point out that I had resolved never to date another actor, and he wasn't an actor when I was dating him. So I ruined his life.
That's, that's good advice. Good advice to all, James.
Having been an actor, I say that, you know, I started sure. I started as an actor, so I in the theater,
yeah.
and having been an actor, I say with great fondness that dating actors is a dangerous occupation.
Yeah, it's a real heartache sometimes.
Yes, it's a hobby you undertake at your own risk. Yeah. But I think we were very solidly, we'd been together for almost 10 years before wow. he even said aloud, "I want to be an actor."
Wow.
So it was a big shock because he'd just gone back to college and just gotten a double degree in history and art history.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, he's going to be a designer. He's going to do this. And he's a great designer. And he said, you know, I think I want to be an actor. And I was stunned, absolutely stunned. But you know, it's worked out for him, so
I totally know that feeling, because I do stand-up comedy, and I dated another comedian, and it just, we butted heads, because I was like, oh, I'm funnier than you, you know what I mean?
And yes, and I think, you know, there are, you know, two actors together, sometimes that can be fantastic, because you do have somebody else with you who understands the life, but
right.
it can get competitive,
oh,
you
yeah.
know. And people's careers tend to peak at different times.
Yes.
And if you're both in the same profession, it can be slightly, it can be, jealousy and envy can rear their ugly heads. I mean, it happens anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I have actors who, you know, friends of mine who've stayed with me who no longer go on IMDb because they can't see their friends doing movies or TV series when they're not working. It just drives them crazy. And
it's depressing.
So in a relationship, it can be even nuttier, I guess. But we've been very successful working together. It's really helped us. Otherwise, the first 3 years of The Closer, if he had not been working there, I wouldn't have seen him at all.
Yeah. Wow. It's a blessing in disguise. James, we have to take a quick 20-second break to mention our sponsors, but when we come back, we have a couple Twitter questions. Do you like Twitter
okay,
questions?
Great. I love them, sure.
All right. Hey, guys, Keith here. Have you guys ever had your stuff, like a cell phone and a Ziploc bag, and you jumped in the water, and then you get out of the water, and your phone was destroyed and wet? Happens to me all the time, but now you could stop that by going to floodtide.com and purchasing one of their cool new super strong LCV1 bag that is cool looking and in style. Again, that's floodtide.com, www.floodtide.com. Now back to the show with James Duff. Excellent.
Flood Tide, everybody.
Yeah.
There you go, Flood Tide. You know, James, I love the crime genre to no end. I'm a big James Ellroy fan, L.A. Confidential and so forth, the Black Dahlia. And, you know, I love all the darkness, of Los Angeles. And what I loved about both your series is that you really punched up, the element of the dark side, the noir side of Los Angeles. And you, in many ways, you updated it. And I thought that was a nice touch to keep that in the background, that the characters exist in this rather dark, which to me is quite true. Do you find that Los Angeles is a great setting? And of course, it's a crime.
Los Angeles is a terrific character in both series.
I meant
we don't think of it as a
character,
as a setting. Actually, we think of it as a character.
Very good. Very good.
And the stories. I mean, that's one of the things we look for. We look for, could this story happen in Los Angeles? Would this story mostly happen in Los Angeles? And is this a story that could have happened 10 years ago?
Sure.
Those are questions that we ask ourselves.
Sure.
If this is a story that could have happened beat for beat 10 years ago, exactly as it's laid out, we don't do it.
Yeah.
And if it's a story that is not Los Angeles-centric in some way, we have to find a way to bring Los Angeles into it. And the cinematography on the show is designed
amazing
to really show the city whenever possible, or some aspect of the city that people may not be familiar with. And in a way, it's a problem. Like, I can't even go to Whole Foods without thinking, well, I wonder if there could be a murder here. So I...
You're right there in the organic alfalfa.
My whole tour of every place in Los Angeles is based on, could somebody be killed here? It makes for some pretty unusual conversations when I'm visiting in one place or another.
Well, James, we got a couple of Twitter questions. So I'm just going to get right into it because we only have about 10 more minutes of your time. Joan C. Turner wants to know, before I go on, the thing I don't like about Twitter is you never know if they're real accounts. You know what I mean?
Right.
But Joan C. Turner wants to know, James, do you have any more plans of directing more episodes of Major Crimes?
Yes, I'm going to direct... I'm going to direct the last episode of this season, this coming season. So, I mean, I would direct more, but we ended up doing so many episodes the last four seasons. We did 19, 19, 23, and then 21 episodes.
Wow.
And, I just didn't have time. I actually finished mixing, doing the sound mix on the last episode of season four on a Friday, and started shooting the first episode of season five on a Monday.
Wow.
And I could have directed an episode, but it would have meant everybody else having to do a lot of extra work, and it just wasn't worth it to me.
Yeah.
I had enough to do, and I didn't want to I didn't want to push other people to do. And I was directing The Identities last year, too, the companion piece to Major Crimes that was on the web for 2 years.
Wow.
But I'm very happy to be directing the last episode.
Yeah.
And
I'm looking
forward to doing it.
On the subject of directing, what I find wonderful about it is you've got this ensemble thing working. And since you know it's a spinoff from The Closer, and you've taken most of the cast, which it's quite a cast you have there, and it's there's so many different types. And by the way, I'm an actor, and I'm half Asian and half Cuban. If you ever need me, in the name of heaven, I'll take one line.
Oh sure.
But you had that ensemble going, and you're directing that, and it has that effect of an ensemble piece. And it's funny that both pieces are linked so well like that, that you carry the entire cast over with you.
That question was brought to you by Alan Lee.
Go ahead.
You know, that ensemble you've got going there, it's you.
Yeah, they are. They're a fantastic group of actors, and it does make doing the show a lot easier. And I know each one of them, and I collaborate with each one of them in their own way. And we really do work like a family unit.
It shows.
So you said another Twitter question.
Oh, yeah, we have two more. I was making a joke about that one being from Alan Lee.
Oh.
Okay, this is from Sujin King 33. Yeah, weird Twitter names, huh? I'm just kidding.
Well, that's all right. Numbers 1 through 32 are busy tonight.
Yeah. Well, Sujin 33 wants to know, have you ever thought of writing more movies?
Yes, and I have thought of writing more movies, and I'm writing a couple of movies now that would be independent features. But here's the problem, and I don't want to sound egotistical at all, but when you write a film, mm-hmm. a lot of times they say thank you, they take the movie, they make it, and that's the last really you have to do with the movie.
Right.
They don't have to involve you at all, and you know I edit all the episodes that I do in television. I mix them. I do the production meetings. I work with the directors very closely before they shoot and while they're shooting sometimes. And in a film, I don't have the capacity to make the story work the way it's designed. I'm completely dependent on the on the attitudes of the director and the producer towards me, and I just don't want to be in that position. Mm-hmm. If I can't be in the editing room, if I can't participate in the production fully as a partner with my work, then I'm not that interested. I don't mind rewriting movies, because that's a kind of a fun game and it doesn't take very long. But to spend a good deal of your life working on a film and put your heart and soul into it, and then they just give you a check and say goodbye, that's not good for me.
Oh. Well, if you want to rewrite the movie I wrote, you're more than happy to. You'll make it so much better than...
Okay, well, we'll talk about that.
All right, cool. And then this is just a last question, and this is weird because the question actually relates to the Twitter name. Quotes and thoughts... wants to know quotes and thoughts. They want to know, James, what's the most inspiring advice you could give amateur writers?
The most inspiring advice.
Yeah.
Well, I will tell you the truth,
uh-huh.
Whether it's inspiring or not. You get better at the things you do every day. And the more you do them, the more likely you are to get better at them, not promising anything, but writers write every day, and really good writers write all the time and are always trying. It's not that I'm so talented or that I'm so smart. I didn't get a call. I could not get a college degree. I got kicked out of every college that would accept me.
Wow.
But I do work very hard, and I get up in the morning and I try to write at least 4 hours a day. And if you do that every day, eventually you finish stuff. Mm-hmm. And you will annoy your friends. You will annoy the people who come and visit you and who think you should drop everything to spend that 4 hours with them. You will annoy your family when you don't pick up the phone because it's during the time when you're writing. You will cause yourself all kinds of grief by making that commitment. But if you don't make that commitment, it's harder for things to happen.
Yeah.
And so that's my advice. My inspiring advice is to write every day, and then I'll add just a little bit there, write about yourself.
Yeah.
Make sure that what you're writing about is important to you and is emotionally connected to you. And if you can do those things, even comedy, by the way, should be emotionally connected to you. And if you can do those two things, then you have a really solid shot at accomplishing something.
Wow, yeah. That's great advice. That's a great question to end an interview on.
Yeah.
James, do you have anything where the folks at home can reach you at, like a Twitter you want to plug away?
Well, I'm at James A. Duff on Twitter. That's James, capital A, Duff on Twitter. And or at James, capital J, A-M-E-S, capital A, capital D-U-F-F on Twitter. And I also, the Major Crimes Facebook page is a great way to communicate both with me and with the entire company.
Yeah.
And when we come back, hopefully, I think it's in October, when we come back in late October, I will be on that page quite a bit.
Nice.
And but you can contact me via Twitter, and I try to get back to people. Sometimes I'm able to.
Yeah. Well, I wish you were here. I mean, I know you were supposed to come to the studio, but meetings got pushed because I wanted to get your autograph on my War at Home DVD that I brought.
Oh, I will do. I will manage that somehow.
Fantastic.
I will manage that somehow.
But thank you so much.
We will. My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed talking to you guys.
Thank you, James.
You're awesome, James. I'm a big fan of you, and thank you so much.
We'd love to talk to you again.
Sure, anytime. Thank you, guys. It was terrific. I had a blast.
Thank you, James.
Bye, James. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Good night. Bye-bye. Blood tied, everybody.
Bye. Oh, man.
That was James Duff, guys.
Yes, indeed.
Excellent writer.
A very... prolific and successful writer, and I'm going to tell you, The Closer and The Major Crimes are really very good police procedurals, and I will be watching all the episodes.
You know what I like is I like that that last Twitter question, like that was very inspiring because. Mm-hmm. I mean,
what was that when for the?
It was what's advice for writers?
Beginning amateur.
Yeah, because that's
right. 4 hours a day.
Yeah, he got really into it, like
and emotionally connected to you.
Yeah,
and it goes for comedy.
Well, yeah,
and now you're emotionally connected to your routine.
Yeah, but I was like, wow. And but the thing I found fascinating was the question was by Quotes and Things, and he actually ended on a great, great. Quote,
yeah,
and thought, you know,
yeah.
Like that's a very, like, what are the odds that happened, and just with the Twitter question and the thoughts and isn't, you know what I mean?
Only on Razor Riffs, ladies and gentlemen, because something
Riffs.
Like that happened nowhere on the planet. Could that have happened?
Yeah, but man, what?
No, it was a great guest.
Oh, he was so interesting too.
Let's face it, when you're on Razor Riffs, man. You come on and you rock. You rock L.A.
It would have been so cool to have him in the studio, though.
Because
you would be gaga eyes.
Well, see, the only problem that I will say, as I was speaking to him, you know that I'm an actor, SAG actor.
I love how you throw in, if you want to cast me, by the way.
Well, you know what? I was shameless. The man's a gentleman. I see the ethnic.
I was going to do that, but I was like,
well, I'm surprised you didn't say, are you at the Comedy Store tonight? And I'm sorry. Listen, this is show business. People understand, right?
Yeah.
And I looked at the complexion of that. You know, there's a lot of ethnic groups in The Closer.
Yeah.
He covered everybody.
Yeah.
And there's room for Alan Lee here somewhere. I'm sorry.
That's a good quote.
There's room for Keith Raza.
Yeah.
They need a couple of bountiful blondes on the show. And yeah. I can see you in The Closer. I could see you as a kid whose father got murdered, and then you become a cop.
Well, I was about to pitch that.
Yeah,
and
no,
you
no,
jumped
I,
ahead.
No, you know, we have a guest. It's a guest time. We don't want to be talking about our aspirations and all that stuff. Although it can be brought up in a diplomatic manner.
Yeah.
And
But you know what I liked most about it was I thought he was just. I mean, I'm just blown away by how great that interview was. You know, like I was like, there's guys we'll talk to that are great, but then like this one is like going to leave me with like, wow.
Okay, for all the other guests who have been on Razor Riffs,
no.
Next week's guest will be a lot better than the last one because Keith gets you get blown away every week.
I get blown away.
Now you know what Norm Macdonald was on, and I hope Norm, you are still the greatest.
Oh, I love Norm. Yeah.
I'm just teasing. I
know.
They all love us, and we love them.
I'm just in shock.
It's like a family.
I'm just in shock because I just talked to one of my personal heroes for an hour. Like, that was awesome. You know, and I wish he was in the studio so I could get his autograph on my DVD of his play.
And he's going to try to do
that. And then, like, I was going to say, oh, by the way, here's my stand-up special. There's always a part for Keith Reza.
There we go.
All right, guys, before we go, we should mention our sponsors one last time. Alan, do you want to mention what you got going on before I do this?
I've got going on, and it's not quite that exciting, I think that next week I'll have the $150 that I owe Screen Actors Guild to be reinstated. And I hope to God it's not more than that. And so next week I'm going to go pay for my SAG card and return to the world of acting. You imagine that? How freaking exciting is that?
That would be awesome because when you go back to the world of acting, you'll have money to go to Hawaii to swim with the alligators.
Bam!
And that's what I'm about to bring up, guys.
Yeah, yeah. So bring it on, man.
I'm going to bring it on.
It says you're cold water.
Raise the rifters, guys. Yeah, I'm sorry. Your guys' name is Rifters. Rifters. Have you ever had stuff in your cell phone and you put it in a Ziploc bag and you're like, oh, I'm just going to jump in the water and take a dip, and then you get out and your Ziploc bag is filled with water and your phone is completely destroyed.
Destroyed,
and like you can't get the text messages. It happens to me all the time. Mm-hmm. But now you can stop it by going to www.floodtide.com and purchasing one of their cool, super strong LCV1 bags. That's cool looking and it's in style. Again, that's www.floodtide.com. www.floodtide.e. You just messed it up.
No, .com.
.com. Okay, let's try it again.
Let's get synchronized here, man.
www.floodtide.com.
Bam!
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, after 9 years of friendship, it only took us 7 tries to say it right.
Well, that's what love is all about.
Well, so this week, guys, I'm actually doing the stand-up comedy, which is what I do. I don't have to prove it, but I do.
You've got something going tonight.
I do. I have the roast battle tonight.
He's going to the Comedy Store tonight.
To roast battle. The roast battle, I either win by a lot or I lose by a lot. I'm like one of those. It's a nightmare for the roast battle guest, or it's an easy win for them.
And we have a friend that's driving us over there who happens to be a comic and a writer as well.
He's a great joke writer, but he doesn't want us to mention him.
No, I'm just saying that I think it's very nice that we have him here.
Yeah, I love him too, but he said, don't mention us. I said, okay.
Initial J.
Yeah. Well, but I'm also doing the Ha Ha Comedy Club tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. You can purchase tickets. I'm auditioning to be a regular at that club. So a paid regular at that club.
Fantastic.
So
good
if
luck.
If my LA fans can come out and support me, so I could audition.
What about your Orange County fans? Will they make the drive?
They won't make the drive.
That's true.
My fans. I'm just promoting. I gave you a chance to plug your stuff.
I'm helping you here. I'm helping you.
For relax.
Maybe Dad Fam will come drive down here.
All right, so I'm at the Ha Ha tomorrow night, auditioning to be a paid regular.
There
if you could go.
Good luck.
There's supposed to be a huge surprise super guest, and that super guest is me, Keith Reza. All right, guys, I'm Keith Reza. Thank you guys so much. See you next week, and thanks again to the one and only James Duff.
And I'm Alan Lee. Thank you, Keith, for having me.
Yeah, like and subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on social media. Gotta go. Bye.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.